lines.
Live from Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
Welcome to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one, the Justice Department has appointed former FBI Director Robert Mueller as special counsel to oversee the investigations into ties between President Trump's campaign and Russian officials. Will this cause the issue to die or drag it out into election years? In round two, President Trump's Treasury Secretary, former Goldman Sachs investment banker and hedge fund manager, announces the administrator's economic agenda, which includes, surprise, deregulating Wall Street. Then in round three, former Nixon advisor and Fox News founder Roger Ailes passes away at age 77. We'll discuss the dramatic effect that he had on American journalism. That's all coming up on today's episode of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Well, Lee, we've got, here in D.C., just another dead news day, not much going on. But
yep,
I figure we'll drag something up to talk about with. Okay, so Robert Mueller, former FBI director, praised by all sides, universally praised all around, and nothing but good stuff to be said about him. He's been in D.C. for many, many years. He's been a prosecutor, all kinds of things that he's done in D.C., and he's got a pretty clean record. So now he's appointed by the Justice Department as a special counsel specifically to look into accusations of collusion between the Trump administration and the Russians, Putin, whatever the case may be. I'm a little fuzzy on that. But, of course, as a special prosecutor, he certainly has the options of, as we used to say in law enforcement, going wherever the investigation takes him, which could take him to the DNC servers. It could take him all over the place. It could take him to the Turkish issues with General Flynn, whatever the case may be. But there are a couple of interesting things here. And this is where I want to start because I think it's important. From the perspective of the story that's going on, because one of the things that's huge here is that every day there's news. There's another hearing that's going to be called. Someone's going to come before a House Intelligence Committee, between a Senate committee. Someone's refusing to, General Flynn's refusing to come before something. So every day there's this drip, drip, drip of information about what's going on. And people like us, journalists, are standing around, with bated breath every day waiting for the newest information. And this will have, I believe, you can give me your opinion, I believe this will have a dramatic effect on this, on that particular dynamic, because now that there is someone who is assigned to do this, who is a professional, and there's universal agreement that he knows what he's doing. Two things that have to happen. Number one is they really need to kind of back off of the any of the things that they're doing that would be related to his investigation in any way, such as bringing various people in to interview them, to question them in front of Congress and ask them a lot of questions that could have an effect on the investigation, number one. Number two, the issue of leaks. There's one thing when someone is leaking information, calling the New York Times, reading him Comey's letter or whatever, when under normal circumstances. But now that Robert Mueller is there, it is my opinion, this guy's a professional. And if there are leaks, he will prosecute people. He will nail people to the wall. And the people who have been in there leaking various things, I'll put it like this. If somebody starts leaking and he finds the first leaker, he's going to make an example of them. So I would imagine the professionals inside have already been told, if you're thinking about leaking, you better stop it. So what do you think about these two dynamics that I'm bringing up, Lee? What are your opinions on it?
Well, look, the Democrats have been calling for a special prosecutor for weeks and weeks and weeks now. And they say, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. So now they got it. They've got a special prosecutor. They got Mueller. And again, this is somebody who, Mueller's history here is interesting because, of course, he first 12 years at the FBI as head of the FBI, and he came in right before 9/11 happened. So he's dealt with dynamic situations before. But let's just talk about what's been happening this week. Let's just talk about what's been happening this week. Yesterday, we had the Dow was up by 373 points. Now, I haven't checked what it is at close today. When I saw it earlier, it was up.
Okay. Pretty much corrected. That was good. Like you and I discussed yesterday, we both felt it was kind of a bump.
But I think there's a reason. I think there was a sense, and I get this day, the past few days, there have been a sense of wheels coming off the administration. I don't think it's accurate, but this is the sense. Wheels coming off, story after story, talk of impeachment. NPR said it's gone from conspiracy theory to, you know, actual talk. Now this Mueller thing, all of that's over. So the Democrats, like I say, they want a special prosecutor. Guess what, guys? Guess what, geniuses? You got it. You got what you wanted. You got the special prosecutor. Now, even people like Lisa Murkowski, for instance, have been saying, let's let Mueller do his job. So I don't think they have any choice but to let him do his job. Now, Trump, now let's, is this going to slow down the media? Yes. Is it going to stop the media? No. No, I'm not crazy. At least I'm not that crazy. It's not going to stop the media, but it's already at a slow. Now, so what I saw they're doing today is, the new headline is, Trump lashes out against special prosecutor. Well, that's not true. He didn't say anything. He didn't lash out against special prosecutor. Trump, by the way, like a lot of Americans, is sick of this whole thing. It's stupid. This whole thing is stupid. It's all smoke. There's no fire. And I understand why Trump is sick of it. And I understand why Trump is, quote unquote, lashing out against that. But he didn't lash out against Mueller. And I think this is going to slow things. Clearly, it's already. It's slowed the roll down on what's going to happen. And even Lindsey Graham was up on TV. So we saw this just before we started the show. Lindsey Graham. Of course, Lindsey Graham is part of what I call, Lindsey Graham and John McCain are what I call the ambiguously Republican duo. Because they always, every time there is a Republican, you can tell when they're going to quote Graham or McCain. Because the headline usually starts with, even Republicans criticize Donald Trump for, even Republicans. So it's always Graham and McCain. That's who it is. Every time, that's who it is.
They're like the David Brooks of the Republican Party, because that's what he always does
to us. That's exactly right.
Even Democrats and David Brooks, you know, gives us the shaft.
No, that's exactly right. And so it's always even, you know, whenever they say, you know, harsh criticism coming against Trump, you know, occasionally you'll get someone like Rand Paul who disagrees on, you know, the move. We've talked about this. The move to restore mandatory minimum sentences. Rand Paul came out against it. But they never talk about Rand Paul as even Republicans. I've noticed that. They'll just say Rand Paul. But even Republicans is a sure giveaway that it's McCain and Graham. Sure giveaway. Okay, so where's this going to go? Nowhere. Because let's talk about this. Now, you're former law enforcement, Garland. So now they're making a big deal. Well, it's a criminal investigation. Well, what does that mean, Garland?
Okay, yeah, I'll explain that to you. So basically, I was, as a lot of people don't know, I was a major law enforcement commander of investigations division. So someone gives you an investigation, Major Nixon, this investigation is yours. So you have a couple options. You can do it, you can look at it through from an administrative perspective. You can look at it from a criminal perspective. So you would want to go always, criminal is the highest bar. That's
okay,
the way
right,
you would want to
so
do
when
it.
When you say administrative, you mean no one's going to jail.
No one's going to be charged with a crime.
Right.
And
right.
If you look at it administratively, you say, this is not criminal. We don't think anybody could be charged with a crime. Well, number one, people do not have the rights of due process. Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights, the freedoms that, you know, from unreasonable search and seizure, freedoms from self-incrimination, things of that nature, right? So there's no due process. Hearsay is allowed, all kinds of things. You can compel a person to answer questions. So what happens is, if you don't do criminal, let's just say Mueller says, well, I'm not going to do this as a criminal investigation. And he brings people in and he compels them to answer questions and all of these things that wouldn't be allowed under the Bill of Rights. If he suddenly determines that it's a criminal investigation, he can't move forward because all of that stuff is not allowed in court. So you always want to do the investigation as a criminal investigation just in case. If nothing turns out to be criminal, you haven't lost anything. But if you don't do it as a criminal investigation and so you do it as an administrative investigation and you don't give people all of the due process that they're afforded under the Bill of Rights, then you're going to be screwed and the person is going to walk free. So the fact that he's doing a criminal investigation doesn't actually tell us anything other than he's a smart guy and he knows what he's doing. Now, here's the other part of it, though. And that is, there are a couple of things going on here, because one of the things is, of course, the attacks on Trump, the people that want to take him out, the people who believe for whatever reason in, you know, Russian collusion, etc. All right. But here's the other part. And that is self-inflicted wounds, because Donald Trump gets on Twitter and makes some of the most boneheaded tweets.
Before you start trashing Trump, I want to break, because
that's part of the dynamic. But okay, we'll finish this. But I got to say that's part of the dynamic.
About something you just brought up, though. This is what you just brought up, because you brought up this sort of two levels you can look at this on: administrative, and then criminal. I'm going to say there's a third level, and you didn't have to deal with it as much. But the way the Congress has been dealing, these microphone-loving boneheads in suits up on Capitol Hill, the way they've been dealing with it is a third level, which has no standard whatsoever, which is pure rhetoric. This has been, I've said it, because I've been at some of these Senate hearings. I've been at some of these House hearings on this subject. This has been a dog and pony show. And guess what? Guess what, geniuses? Robert Mueller just tamed your dog and killed your pony. You don't get
well, you know what? That's interesting, because
I had to deal with it,
but not on this level. And that is the other end is the political, the person looking at an investigation from a political perspective. And you are very right in that now they're really going to have to stay away from it. They're going to have to be very even wary of what comments they make if they get any inside information, because it can be said that you're having an influence on the investigation if you start talking too much. So really the political part, and you're right, because if you ever go, and not just this, but you know, I'm sure you have, I've been to hearings, and what you get when you get to some of these Senate and House hearings, you get people stand up and sitting down, and a member of Congress will say, I have a question. And they'll use their entire allotted time to make an assertion. And at the end, they never have a question. But it's all grandstanding for people. So that part of it, the grandstanding, the getting in front of the camera and the, you know, making their political points. Yeah, you're right. That's out the window for the most part.
Well, look, first off, as I say, you know, before we came in, Graham was up whining about this exact thing. This is what Graham was whining about. Lindsey Graham was complaining, basically, like, oh, well, they're taking her phone away. I'm not going to be able to have a show trial. I'm not quoting directly. It's a paraphrase. But it was basically like, well, we can't have these hearings. We can't subpoena people. Well, yeah, good. Now let's go to your,
quick statement about that is something I was doing a Facebook video on last night. And I said, you know, God forbid now they're going to have to do their job. Now, I said last night, I said, well, all this is going on. There's a health care reform bill. You know, I'm a Democrat and I feel like the Democrats should be trying to protect the ACA. That's what I expect the people in my party to be doing. Now, certainly you're going to expect the people in your party to do whatever it is you expect them to do.
Like win.
Yeah. So when this happens, you know, to me, there are a lot of people who should be addressing issues. There's an infrastructure bill. There's a lot of things going on. There's going to be a renegotiation of NAFTA. We're going to talk a little bit about that and some other policy-related issues in round two. But they're going to actually have to do things related to their job other than just talk all day about, you know, about that.
Well, here's the thing, though. So you're trying to blame Trump for this. And, you know, this is a real Democrat move, I got to say. This self-inflicted wound idea. This has been, Trump is absolutely right. When he goes up on Twitter and says this is a witch hunt, this has absolutely been a witch hunt. It has been a completely manufactured story. As I've talked about, even the people in the press room, I did an interview today. The people in the press room don't even know what they're talking about. They're so ignorant. You know, when you tell people that the Democrats did not give the FBI the servers to examine, most people don't know that, because the FBI, Comey, who, by the way, gave the thumbs up to CrowdStrike, the DNC hired company that are the only people to have examined the servers, who later had to retract a major report that they did. No one knows the actual details of this story. Nobody. And so, but for you to blame Trump and say, well, it's a self-inflicted wound. No, 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 no.
So let me talk about this self-inflicted wound. We are remiss if we do not admit that there are self-inflicted wounds. Couple of things here. Number one, and that is, there's a story out now. I'm not going to that's basically says when Comey was told, when President Trump was told about the special prosecutor, he gathered his closest advisors, and most of them said, you know, just kind of chill out, be cool on. And Jared Kushner said, fight back. Well, we see this tweet coming out from him about a witch hunt. That's what I mean. The bottom line is this:
in my opinion, the
president of Twitter makes very foolish errors by constantly trying to bypass his public relations department, bypass his people who talk.
This is how he won the election.
One line Twitter tweets, and so here's what I think is going to happen.
Which is what the media hates. Yes, that's what he does. He speaks to the people.
While this thing could calm down and cool off and give him an opportunity to prove whether or not he's competent to become president and to run the country, I don't think he's competent, but he could prove that he is, and he could fool people like me. But this guy is going to be on Twitter. He's going to be making a bunch of boneheaded tweets, and he's going to continue to raise the issues and give people reasons to attack him.
Did you ever see the movie Shane?
I never saw the movie Shane.
You never saw the movie Shane, the Western? Shane. Great movie. Jack Palance. My son Shane is named after Shane.
I was a spaghetti Western guy, so I liked all the Clint Eastwood.
Okay, well, there's a very famous scene in Shane where Jack Palance plays this bad guy gunfighter, and he goes into town, and there's a townsperson there, and Palance is like, there's a gun on the ground, and he says to the townsperson, pick up the gun. And the townsperson's like, I don't want to pick up the gun, mister. I don't want to have trouble. Pick it up. And then the guy picks it up and plants, boom, he blows him away and says, see, he had a gun. That's a Bill Hicks routine too, by the way. But that's what happens. This is what the media does with Trump. What the media does with Trump is like, go ahead.
Make our day tweet.
Do a tweet.
And he doesn't have any better sense than not to tweet.
Because he's speaking directly to the American people. The media hates it. Because Donald Trump bypasses. No, it's not.
This is ridiculous to the American people. This is a witch hunt.
This is absolutely a witch hunt. That's stupid. I hate to break it to you. This is what got him elected. What got him elected was the fact that he went around the media. And by the way, this will come up again when we talk about Roger Ailes in the third round. He went past the media. It drives the media bonko. They can't deal with it, right? And then they want to blame him. Go ahead, make a tweet.
Well, he makes
a tweet, and they go, see, it's a self-inflicted
wound. Well, I would
certainly
argue that what got him elected was running against an unelectable candidate. Not hard to get elected when you're running against Hillary Clinton. You're probably going to win. You could beat Hillary Clinton.
It is hard. I could absolutely beat her. I could absolutely beat her, but that's not because I'm a bad candidate.
And you could tweet bad stuff all the crazy stuff like President Trump, and you'd probably still. But we got a lot more to go here. We're going to talk about some economic policy changes on the horizon with the Trump administration. We'll be right back. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Round two on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin is talking the economy, which is what he's going to tend to do since he's the Treasury Secretary. And he's also been going at it with Elizabeth Warren. He's clarifying stuff. Now, before Garland, before you mischaracterize what Mnuchin is saying, because look, I'm watching Mnuchin. You hear that, Mnuchin? I got my eye on you. I'm watching Mnuchin.
And he's watching you. Watching him.
I don't think so.
I doubt it.
Although my office is right across from the Treasury building. So he could be. So me suddenly saying, I'm watching you, Mnuchin, the Secret Service could end up in my office.
If you see some red dots on your chest when you walk outside, don't be shocked. I'm a little nervous.
But it's a beautiful building, too. I got to say, it's a beautiful building. So I worry about Mnuchin for the reasons that I've stated before, which is he's got some ties, for instance, to, you know, George Soros. He was in business with him. That's a concern to me. And he's the kind of Goldman Sachs guy that worries me. By the way, the kind of Goldman Sachs guy who doesn't worry me is Stephen K. Bannon. But Gary Cohn, you know, worries me. Dina Powell worries me. Mnuchin worries me. But that being said, he clarified. He was going back and forth. And by the way, I got to say, if it's a fight between Steven Mnuchin and Elizabeth Warren, I'm going to go with Mnuchin every time, unless it's arm wrestling, in which case then Warren may have an edge. I'm just saying, she may have a little bit of an edge. But otherwise, I'm going to be a Mnuchin. If that's my choice, Elizabeth Warren. And why do I say that? Because Elizabeth Warren is an awful liar. That's... And I'm working on a story.
She doesn't get much practice at it. That's the problem.
I'm working on a story.
Right down the middle of the plate, didn't you?
I'm working on a story right now about how Andy Puzner, who was the labor nominee for a little while. This will be coming out soon.
He wasn't from Goldman Sachs. He didn't have any Goldman Sachs ties, did he?
No, he didn't. Andy was the head of Carl's Jr. Hardee's.
Oh, yes, I remember him. Yeah,
and he went and he had a meeting with Elizabeth Warren and directly told her, for instance, that on the minimum wage, he was in favor of a minimum wage hike. He just didn't think 15 an hour was practical. And as labor secretary, he would oppose that. But he wasn't opposed to the minimum wage going up somewhat. And Elizabeth Warren turned around after that meeting, after he made that very clear, turned around and just blatantly lied about it. So when I say she's a liar, I mean liar.
And then he went out and gave all of his employees a written. No, that's right. No, he didn't.
But go ahead. Continue on.
He didn't. He didn't give them. He probably paid market wages, which you should do. I don't know if you've ever run a restaurant.
Took their fry break.
What's that?
He said he probably cut their wages and took their fry break.
No, I don't. No, he didn't. Carl's Jr. has very, very happy employees, unless they were working for the unions and part of a dog and pony show. But I digress. So the point I want to make, though, about Warren, though, is Warren was acting, look, this part of this tax plan, for instance, let's talk about the tax plan part of it first. There's part of it that allows, some corporations are pass-throughs, right? Which means the corporation is really like a holding company or something like that for another corporation. And Warren was questioning him about this. And Mnuchin made it clear, and you mentioned hedge fund guy, right? He said hedge funds are, so they're dropping the corporate tax rate to 15%. Okay, yes, good. I'm in favor of that. Our corporate tax rate has been scandalously high in the United States. But he came out and said that's not going to be the hedge funds. Well, I'm in favor of that. So Mnuchin, as far as I'm concerned, that was a good move. Now, what's your objection to what Mnuchin's talking about?
Well,
because
okay.
I might agree with you. It's possible.
All right. My problem, there's a couple of things going on here. And number one, you know my belief. I don't believe in Goldman Sachs populists. So you have a guy who, you know, calls himself a populist, but he's a billionaire elitist and he surrounds himself by a bunch of billionaire Wall Street elitists, although one of them's from Rothschild's corporation. So, you know, but at any rate. And when the first thing I see here is the Treasury Secretary also focused on the Trump administration goals of loosening regulations on Wall Street. And you know, the first thing I thought about, I hate to say this, Lee, this probably isn't going to go over too well to some people, but a lot of Republicans are suckers. A lot of Republicans are suckers. Let me tell you why, Lee, and I will tell you why. Because when you call yourself a populist, right? I'm for the little guy. I'm for the grand guy, right? And the billionaire elitist on Wall Street, the Goldman Sachs, Rothschild, Citigroup elitists say, this is the policy we want. Why, just deregulate Wall Street and you can trust us to do the right thing. And you say, I'm with him. I'm fighting for the same policy as the guy on Wall Street, as the billionaires on Wall Street. But now I oppose these guys because they're a bunch of elitists. But when it comes to policy, I want exactly the same policy as they do. To me, that, you know, the argument that you're a populist rings hollow. And now the president who said he's a populist and he's a globalist and he's all of it. You know, he's tall and he's short. He's light and he's dark. He's young and he's old. He's everything that everybody needs him to be, is showing to me with his group of Wall Street elitists and with what they're going to do, which, oh, what a shock. The billionaires are going to do what's never worked and what they always do. They're going to lower tax on the rich and they're going to deregulate Wall Street. He's going to back off his promises to make significant changes in NAFTA. And you know what we're going to get? We're going to get what we get under Republican presidents. We're going to get a quadrupled, poopled deficit.
Poopled?
Did you really say poopled? I just made that up, and that's an actual number. And
just checking.
And the economy's going to tank.
Okay, so let's go. So you've made a bunch of broad, general, hateful, progressive taunts. Now tell me, what specific regulation are you worried about being rolled back? Be specific. Name a specific. Don't give me this general utopian unicorn riding progressive rant. Tell me specifically what part of the economy you want the government to have more control of. Be specific.
That's a good question, you know,
because specific, yeah.
And I was in agreement with candidate Trump, but apparently President Trump has never heard of candidate Trump, because a neoliberal who I disagree with on economic policy by the name of William Jefferson Clinton worked with the Republican Congress to undo any number of banking regulations. But the pinnacle, the height of them giving us, of him and his group of Republicans giving us the shaft, was to do away with Glass-Steagall. Now, candidate Trump said, you know, we need to do something with Glass-Steagall. We need to reinstate Glass-Steagall.
Okay,
now, President Trump
has
backed off on that.
Be specific what Glass-Steagall is. Be specific about it so people know what you're talking about.
Well, what it does is it basically separates little banks from big banks. The little banks can do loans. They can, you know, they can take money in. But the big banks can do financial transactions, but they can't do car mortgages and the little things. It's a separation between the two. And now that that separation was moved, and that separation was put in there under the FDR administration after the Great Depression, because they realized that's one of the things that caused the Great Depression. And lo and behold, William Jefferson Clinton and the Republicans undid it. And what do you know? 9 years later, we had the Great Recession. Who could have ever predicted that? Said no one ever. So
if you're talking about the recession, they're reneging on their promise.
He's reneging on, well, Donald Trump reneging on a promise. Whoever heard of that? That's all he does, is reneging on promise. But this is another promise he's reneging on, and that is to reinstate Glass-Steagall. They'll never touch it with a bunch of people. I mean, his cabinet is full of Wall Street hacks. How in the world is he ever going to touch Glass-Steagall?
Well,
let me
be specific.
They'll toss him off the White House roof if he even thinks about it.
You're trying to bring up the housing crisis. Let's be specific about what caused a lot of that. A lot of the housing crisis was caused by the government intervention in the economy, specifically creating incentives for companies to give loans to people out of some liberal do-gooder philosophy that we need to have ownership and stuff like that, and we need to have more ownership. And a lot of it was specifically, by the way, about, well, we need minority ownership. That's part of what they did. And they were giving credit to people who had no business whatsoever buying homes, who didn't understand money. And they set up this situation where people were literally being approved for homes who had negative credit. They didn't even do a credit check. This is how crazy things got. Now, by the way, businesses without government interference wouldn't operate that way because it's stupid, right? Now, by the way, one of the people who was behind that, this is the Freddie Mac scam. And one of the people behind that was, of course, Jamie Gerlich, who is now the attorney for Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. So
And
a big Democrat. I don't like her. So that's not personal. I'm sure if she wants to buy me a steak, that'd be fine. But it's not personal. But she's been involved in a lot of horrible policies. Now, what you don't want to talk about is the fact that it wasn't...
I don't remember saying I didn't want to talk about it.
It wasn't deregulation that caused it. Well, then talk about it. Talk about why you would give people who don't have any knowledge of money, who've been unsuccessful, who have been unable to get a credit rating. And by the way, I've had credit problems. I wouldn't have lent me money for a home. There have been absolutely points in my life where I would have looked at me and said, never mind. But what I did was I didn't try to get a home loan. What I did was, and what a normal American does, unless you're trying to get away with some government-sponsored scam, what you do is you look at your financial situation and go, hey, you know what? I'm not in a situation where I can buy a home. But this is what happened. So all of these people were given these home loans, and then shock, they couldn't pay them. And this started the domino effect that triggered the banking crisis that you're talking about. It wasn't a lack of, it wasn't deregulation that caused it. It was government incentive to, quote unquote, help the poor people. We need to help the poor people. We need to help the poor people. Well, you didn't help anybody.
So this is so for our audience, let me tell you, this is classic conservative. And that is, if there's a problem, you must be the guardians of the wealthy and the elite, and you must blame the people at the bottom. No,
I'm not blaming the people at the bottom. I'm blaming the government. That's who I'm blaming.
It's not a bunch of crooked banks. It's not a bunch of banks that sold loans and that pretty much forced these companies that rate loans to rate loans as AAA loans when they know they weren't. They pretty much forced these companies to do that, knowing that the loans would flop. And then they went and doubled down on it, and they bought insurance from AIG on these loans. So they make these loans that'll flop. Right.
Are you?
And then they buy it. Let me finish.
And why would they flop?
And then wait.
Why would
and
they
then
flop?
They go buy insurance on the loans, knowing that they're going to flop. It was a scheme.
Why,
you know what it's like?
Why,
it's the equivalent.
Why would they flop?
Wait, it's the equivalent of me taking insurance on your house, knowing that your house is made of tinder and that you smoke every day, and then going over there and lighting your house on fire and burning it down. You know why this was? This was from crooked banks. This is
what banks will do
what? If you allow them to do
are
it.
Are you denying, can you possibly deny that the U.S. government was incenting banks to give loans to people who had no business getting loans?
That's not what caused the crisis.
Wait, are you denying that's what happened? Are you denying that people were given loans? I'll make it real easy,
darling.
Make it real easy. Yes or no? Were people given loans who had no business getting loans?
Were people given loans? That's going to happen. The government didn't force that. The government always tries to incentivize the banks to give out more loans. And apparently that's
what they don't always incentivize.
That being said,
why is the government? You just said it.
Here's a perfect example.
You're agreeing with me.
Here's a perfect example. 1980, 1981. What happens? You come in with Ronald Reagan, and there's savings and loan deregulation. You remember that? There was two Democrats. Chuck Schumer was one of them. Another guy's named St. Germain, and I don't remember the other. There were two Republicans and a Democrat come up with this brilliant idea that they're going to deregulate the savings loans. And the exact same thing happened. Within 7 years, the people are paying $550 billion, because if you deregulate the banks, they will do that every time, because their job is to make money. And let me add this. And even after that, Republicans still didn't understand something. After all of that, all this time, here's what they told us. The market is a natural animal. The market is a natural order. You must leave the market alone and it will self-correct, which was always a lie. And let me tell you the proof.
That's the truth.
Let me tell you, I am about to prove to you that that's a lie right now. And everybody listening, that's a lie. The market drove itself into the toilet. The banking market drove itself into the toilet in 2008. Did they let it self-correct? No, they didn't. They printed $1.5 trillion and gave it to the banks. It was proven to be a lie, because if it was true, they would have gotten out of the way. And don't try to say it was the Democrats. There was a Republican in office, and he looked up.
Oh, yeah.
And the Republican said, we got to bail them out because they're going to hit the bottom.
If you're making an argument.
So they didn't let it self-correct.
If you're making an argument that the government should not intervene on behalf of big banks, I agree with you.
But they did, because they knew it was a lie. They knew they had to intervene because
they were
going to crash.
This was a package deal. And what, again, the part you want to avoid, you're fine with that part. See, here's the thing, Garland. You and I agree on that. Yes, the government got involved and the government helped big banks, and they shouldn't have done that.
They knew they had to.
But you know who else they shouldn't have helped? They shouldn't have done something to help poor people. That's what else they shouldn't have done.
Well, you never think they should help poor people.
Right, because it doesn't actually,
never think they should help poor people.
It doesn't actually help poor people. The premise of this was based on this BS notion that somehow, that, look, you see, this is the thing, Garland. You agree with the fundamental premise. You just don't like it when the government helps big business. And I don't like it when the government helps anybody. It was not the free market that caused the problem. It was government intervention. And that's just a fact. You can't even admit that. You got to go back talk about Reagan.
So you oppose the Monsanto subsidies? You oppose all the subsidies to the but the government's not going to stop giving welfare to the richest countries on earth.
Wait a second.
Welfare to the richest countries on earth. They give welfare, but God knows, forbid, they should give a penny to a poor person.
I'm opposed to corporate welfare, and I'm opposed to individual welfare.
Well, rest assured, Trump and his people
are. I'm in favor of a safety net. If there's a safety net, that makes sense to me. If somebody loses their job, there should be a certain amount of unemployment benefits you get. But the amount of, let's just take, we take unemployment just for a quick second. The amount of unemployment benefits they get kept being stretched out and out and out. And people aren't stupid. And eventually they figure out, hey, you know what? It's better for me not to work than it is for me to work. It's if you put people in entitlement housing, in Section 8 housing, and they realize, gee, if I get a raise, I'm going to need to move out of the Section 8 housing.
But people aren't dumb,
so what they do is they don't get a raise.
But after the economy crashed, there was four people looking for every one job. So how was doing that, how were they going to be helped? When there were four people looking for every one job, how was that going to help them get a job by cutting off their unemployment benefits? That the job had already been taken three times.
Because when you cut off people's, if you give people stuff, this is a fundamental mistake you progressives make.
Yeah, that is a fundamental mistake
all the time.
Of your ideology, believing that.
This is a spoiled children political philosophy. This is bad parenting turned into a political ideology. That's what progressivism is. It is bad parenting turned to a political ideology. Everybody knows that if you spoil your children, it doesn't work out well. And on the other hand, you can help your kids. But if you're like, yeah, hey, son, you can just live in the basement forever. Guess what? You get these millennial snowflakes now who, shock, live in the basement forever.
How about this?
But if you say to them, hey, look, you got 4 weeks to clean up your act, right? If you say to your kids, hey, Jesse,
that's
you got 4 weeks. I'm just using Jesse as a
that's
theoretical name. I'm not saying the kid's
it?
Actual name would be Jesse. By the way, Jesse's our board op right now, and he's crying in the other room because he thinks I meant him.
Here's a thought. Government as a parent is a bad metaphor, and what you're doing is called social engineering. We need a new metaphor because government is not parents.
I agree with you. Then you should stop
bad metaphor.
Acting. Then you should stop acting like the parents and like the nanny state and trying to help the poor people and treating poor people like their children. Anyway, coming up next, we had two deaths today. We'll be talking about one of them. Roger Ailes from Fox News changed news forever. We'll be talking about him coming up in round three on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Roger Ailes was the executive producer of The Mike Douglas Show. And he had a meeting with Richard Nixon, talked to him a little bit about politics, and became a Nixon advisor. He went on to work with other Republicans, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush. In the 90s, he worked with Rush Limbaugh on his late night talk show. And he actually became president of CNBC in 96. He worked with Rupert Murdoch, and he launched Fox News, and news in America has never been the same. Now, there are those who name Rush Limbaugh and Rupert Murdoch as changing the face of the landscape of news in America, and they did. I also think that the telecom bill, which was signed by, one William Jefferson Clinton, had a tremendous effect because it consolidated the media into a few companies. But what Roger Ailes did was, you know, and I hear people, and I'll say this, Lee, I hear people long for the old days when they believed that the news were, whether or not it was, I don't know, but people believed that news organizations were considerably less partisan, but he really brought a lot of partisanship in it. Now, you know, Roger Ailes believed that everyone else was liberal and he had to make up for it by going hardcore conservative. But there are a lot of us who felt that, no, that wasn't necessarily the case, that he went hardcore conservative and the landscape changed. No, I'm just saying, look, this is organically what happened, because it's possible that what happened with a Rush Limbaugh and a Roger Ailes is that they reflected the partisanship in America as opposed to shame, you know, as opposed to that. I'll put it like this, that they exposed partisanship in America as opposed to forced it to grow. I don't know. But I don't. You know, I don't think that I think it's indisputable that Fox News has had a tremendous effect. And, you know, and in the interest of transparency, you know, 2010, I was doing radio in D.C. and I got a call one day and they said hey, look, I'm here at Fox News in New York and we need another liberal, which, you know, I, you know, kind of, you know, wrinkle my lip at the word liberal, you know, because I consider myself a progressive. For those who have never heard me say this, I consider the liberals to be the right wing of the Democratic Party, the Hillary people, and the progressives to be the left wing of the party, the Bernie people. And right now there's a major rift between the two. That's why that delineation is important. But at any rate, so I went up there and I went on Eric Bolling's show, a guy who I don't agree with or anything, but I love Eric Bolling. I think he's a great guy. He's a good friend of mine. I met a lot of people that I don't agree with that are still friends of mine, but a lot of people that I like there. And I still do Fox, and I've had a good time there. And in defense of Fox, let me say this. I've tried to get on MSNBC, couldn't do it. Tried and tried to get on CNN. I had people on the inside, tried, never good. And in defense of Fox, they always put me on, they always let me on, they always let me say what I believed. So, you know, I will defend Fox in that they've given me a chance. They've given me a chance. As far as fair and balanced, no, I think it's, let's face it, you know. I mean,
well,
it sounds good.
If they're having you on, that would seem to make them fair and balanced. If they're having somebody who disagrees, right, that would make them fair and balanced.
On the whole, my opinion of Fox is no, that it's not. Their opinion is not. There was no intent to be fair and balanced. That's the fact of the matter. The intent,
well,
in my opinion, I'll throw this to you. I'll finish by this because I'm getting kind of long-winded. I think the intent of Fox was to believe that the landscape as a whole was not fair and that if they would be conservative and balance it out. But what effect do you think Fox has had on the journalistic landscape in America, and do you think it's been positive or negative?
Well, you used one P word to describe Fox. I'm going to use another one, but let me bookmark that for a second. So I'm going to mention this because it's worth mentioning. So I woke up about 4 o'clock this morning because I'm an old man and we wake up in the middle of the night and use the restroom. That's what we do. It just happens. So not you, Garland, but just me, I guess. And I made the mistake of looking at my phone. And I saw that Chris Cornell was dead.
Yeah,
Cornell.
When you get to my age, unfortunately, you don't wake up. Had to throw that joke
that's
out
a little,
there.
Yeah, I was going to say.
A little bit of a messy joke.
And it's a little bit too much information, especially before
dinner.
That's
a great joke. That was a great one. You set me up. Good setup. So
ask me if that was a good joke. Ask me.
Was that a good joke?
Depends. So here's the thing. Chris Cornell, lead singer of Audioslave, lead singer of
Soundgarden.
Yeah. One of the best voices in rock and roll in the past 30 years. Absolutely one of the best voices. I saw Chris Cornell was dead. And I met Chris Cornell real briefly about 10 years ago when I was working at NBC and Access Hollywood. There were only like half a dozen people. I used to watch The Tonight Show. Bands would rehearse every day. And usually I don't care, right? So if it's like, well, I'm not knocking her. I'm just pulling the name out of it. If it's Christina Aguilera or something like that, I didn't want to get a autograph for her. There's a zillion bands come and go, right? But Cornell was on. I got a photo with him and my son. He was very nice. He was with his wife at the time. And it was very nice, very gracious about it, very gentle seeming and stuff like that. And for a guy with a powerful voice. And so I saw that Cornell was dead. And now it's come out. The medical examiner says that he hanged himself.
Yeah.
By the way, the 37 years to the day that Ian Curtis from Joy Division hanged himself, and it started the day off badly for me. I just got to say, it started the day off badly for me. I played a bunch of his songs, and we lost Scott Weiland last year, and it's been a rough year for a great vocalist of 90s bands. Then I saw that Roger Ailes was gone, and I'll be honest, I don't care as much about Roger Ailes as I do about Chris Cornell. For instance, when Roger Ailes was singing with Audioslave, the tour that he did with them,
no,
it was horrible. Just horrible. Okay, no, he might not have done that. Maybe I don't have my notes. But anyway, so the Cornell thing bummed me out. Now, the Ailes thing, you use the term partisan. Let's go back to the P word here. You use the term partisan. I'm going to use a different word to describe what Fox did, and it is why they have been the number one network since they debuted under Roger Ailes. It's not because they're partisan. Ready? It's because they're patriotic. The defining characteristic of Fox News has been that they took a pro-American point of view. And people in the media viewing audience were so sick of the mainstream media not loving America. This is why Make America Great Again. You know, Trump did something he doesn't get enough credit for it. Trump did something phenomenal in this election from a branding perspective. How many times do you see a candidate start with one slogan and end with the same slogan? Just practically. Usually they go through a couple of iterations of a slogan. Does that make sense? They sort of figure it out.
The ones that win do. I mean, like Obama with the change thing. You know, the ones that win, actually, the ones that win usually have a strong slogan, and they're pretty consistent.
He got to that, but he did not start there. Trump started with Make America Great Again and ended with Make America Great Again. And that sort of pro-American thing is exactly what Fox did. Now, the other thing that they brought to it, and part of this is Ailes, I guess, but part of it's also Rupert Murdoch. Let's be honest, is they brought a sort of British, Murdoch's Australian, but close enough. The accents are close enough.
Yeah.
You know, what are the Australians, basically? They're the British that were so bad that they were exiled to an island. That's who they are, really. The Australians are literally...
They're kind of like British people who have hot water and kangaroos and like really poisonous snakes. No,
literally it was a prison colony, right?
Yeah.
So that's... let's just be honest. I'm not knocking you, Australia. But it was a prison colony, right? But you know, it's a British prison colony.
Kind of thing, yeah.
So the other thing that Fox News brought to it was a tabloid sensibility in terms of showing ladies, right? You know what I mean? The British tabloids have this long tradition, Page Three girls and stuff like that, right? Where there's, you know, actual nudity, just like because you flip through.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I think one of the things that he did... By the way,
if the New York Times wants to start that anytime, I think you'll see your subscriptions dip quickly and then rise suddenly.
One of the things that I think Fox News did, and when you say that they were patriotic or whatever you say that they were, and you're a conservative guy and you see, and that's the way your perspective on them.
They were explicitly pro-American. Do you not agree? Do you not agree that they were very explicitly pro-American?
I would say they were borderline nationalistic at times, which you would love and I wouldn't be so thrilled with.
Right, but which nation? This one, right?
Nationalistic? Yeah, that's what nationalists do. But my point, which makes my point too. And that is this. So one of the things I think Fox News did that news organizations hadn't traditionally been doing, two things. Number one, they focused on news and not so much on presentation, you know, the pretty girls, let's be honest, the Megyn Kellys of the world. They didn't focus as much on the graphics. You know, they got bright, pretty color graphics and things like that. They focused on presenting a product that people would like to see. They also focused on, in I think this patriotic nationalism, whatever you determine to call it, I think they focused on a particular demographic. If you look at the demographic right now for the Fox News, which could be a problem because like the average age of Fox News viewers is getting up in the upper 60s, their average age. So the fact
that they're number one.
Yeah, right? It is. No, that's definitely number one. So there's something to be said from a business perspective of a news organization that just throws out news to everybody, as opposed to a news organization that focuses on a particular graphic.
Name that news organization. Name the news organization that just throws news out to everybody.
Well, that's changed. That's changed. It's really that's gone.
By the way, people talk about this supposed golden age of news, and it never existed. There was never a golden age of news.
As blatantly. You know, it's funny because you watch MSNBC, God only knows what they're going to do, but I watch them which I don't watch MSNBC, which if I did, during the Bush administration, they had Scarborough Country, they had a bunch of conservatives, right? So Obama comes in and they bring a bunch of the centrists that people like Lee would call the left, and I know they ain't the left, right? Okay, they bring
Al
in the
Sharpton?
They bring
Is
in
Al
the
Sharpton
centrist.
Not the left?
Yeah,
Rachel Maddow?
Yeah.
Rachel Maddow? Is she not the left?
No, she's centrist. These Hillary people, now I can't consider them the left. Sharpton, yeah, I'd give them left. But at any rate, here's what I have to say.
But Rachel Maddow is a little too moderate for you.
Rachel Maddow, man, you know, look, she's part of the machine. You give somebody $7.5 million, a lot of times, buddy, that carries a lot of weight, and she ends up part of the machine. Okay, so here's my point being, I don't want to get taken away from my point. My point being, you get in like an MSNBC, depending on who the president is, because let's face it, Trump gets they're banishing Sharpton and these people to the weekend. They're bringing in Megyn Kelly.
Well, because he's horrible. Because Sharpton's a horrible host.
They're bringing in your Gretchen, what's her other name?
Gretchen Carlson?
No, not Carlson. There's another woman. I can't think of her name. She was on Fox. They brought her. But whatever the case may be, I've met her many times.
I don't watch much TV.
Greta Van Susteren. So you got these other organizations that are all over the place. You know, MSNBC's just kind of drifting with the wind. And you've got CNN, who I would rather have partisan hacks than just, to be honest, I'd rather have a partisan hack than I would a CNN, which is nothing but...
Partisan hacks? What do you mean you'd rather have partisan hacks? They
are nothing but tools for, the ultimate tools for the
CNN
machine.
CNN had, let's go over this.
Tools
you want
for
to
that
talk about
Wall
partisan
Street
hack.
Machine.
Let's talk about partisan hacks, for instance. Two words, Donna Brazile. You had Donna Brazile on CNN who literally gave questions.
Right.
Illegally, effectively, to Hillary Clinton, who was then rewarded by Hillary Clinton by being made the head of the DNC. You don't get more partisan or hacky.
In my opinion, that's tools for the machine, because in my opinion, the Hillary people are just, that's the Wall Street machine. That's all it is.
Okay, but it's...
These are the people who took out the left. They took out Bernie.
Partisan.
They executed Bernie and his people on the news.
But
they
if the opposite of partisan...
We got the guillotine, man.
If the opposite of partisan is nonpartisan, you would never call Donna Brazile nonpartisan. She's a complete... She literally was running the party as reward.
Oh, gosh.
Right? She was. She was running the Democrat Party.
And I oppose
party.
All of these people.
Okay,
so
you oppose them, but you can't not call them partisan. She's as partisan as it gets. And when you got people like Van Jones... And I'll tell you, here's the other thing, Garland. You think... And again, anybody even close to the center or right who just heard you say Rachel Maddow is a little too moderate for you.
No, I said she's part of the machine. She's just part of the machine. She's a $7.5 million part of the machine.
Let me tell you what people who are Trump supporters say. Let me tell you what people who are real anti-globalists say. And this is what people aren't going to say. You're not going to hear this in the mainstream media without Roger Ailes. Fox doesn't go far enough.
Of course, you would never. Conservatives never think so.
Fox is wimpy. I got to tell you, no. Fox is wimpy. And even Bill O'Reilly, who just left, right? Whatever. Bill O'Reilly was a highly rated host. But I got to say, in terms of fighting the good fight for the values that I hold near and dear, Bill O'Reilly was never that guy. Now, the guy who I like, who I'm glad O'Reilly's gone in a sense, Tucker Carlson, is kicking butt over there for a guy who used to wear a bow tie. And by the way, I like Tucker, and I've exchanged email with him. I've talked to him a little bit. I like Tucker a lot. But Tucker Carlson is showing some oomph over there. The other thing about Fox that they're not going to be given credit for, and, you know, again, it's that tabloidy thing a little bit, but they ain't boring, you know. They try to goose it a little bit. Now, the problem is you still got people like Shepard Smith. Shep's got to go. He doesn't belong in the Fox network. And I think Fox viewers would 100% agree with me. I think if Shepard Smith were to vanish mysteriously from the Fox lineup, everyone would go, all right. I think that, like I say, they need more like Tucker. I think Hannity's doing a great job. And I think Hannity was instrumental. And I think that they're continuing to drive stuff. I'm skeptical of aspects of this Seth Rich investigation, but at least Fox has the cojones to actually bring it up. At least they do.
Here's what I'll say about Fox.
And
I'm not watching.
The wilderness, man.
I'm not watching MSNBC, CNN, or Fox. I'm not watching any of them. But here's what I'll say about Fox. I have more respect for a person who will tell me what he is than a person who's floating around pretending to be all things. So I got more respect for Roger Ailes and the Fox people, who are pretty clear that this is a conservative. This is kind of a mouthpiece for the Republican Party. They've never been ashamed of that. Roger Ailes has actually pushed to get, he's contacted people. He's told people, I think you ought to run for president or you ought to run for this. I got more respect for a person who will come out and say that, even though I don't agree with it, with him, than I do for the MSNBCs and CNNs.
But when you've got networks, when you've got mainstream networks like ABC, literally hiring little George Stephanopoulos right out of the White House.
The Clinton people.
Right. They got rid of his Cub Scout uniform. They put him in a suit. Right. And they have George Stephanopoulos hosting a show. George Stephanopoulos has no, what was his broadcast background? He didn't have any. They are as partisan as you can get. And the lie is, look, you got Fox on one side. There, let's give it. There you go. There's one side on Fox. And on the other side, you've got ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, right? Let's just start there. PBS, let's keep going. And I think this shows how much Democrats hate free speech. No, they absolutely hate free speech, and here's why. They want no Fox. They want nothing. They don't want anything.
Well, we got to say,
Fox
at least,
is the only moderately conservative
Donald
channel.
Trump was the great uniter. He brought it all together because he brought in all of the establishment Wall Street hacks into his administration. And so now they're all unified and happy. We'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.